Welcome to the Social Standard Podcast. I'm Jessica Phillips, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Social Standard, a full-service influencer marketing agency. As a leader, I'm always striving to set new standards in our industry. My goal with this podcast is to highlight those who are doing the same. On each episode, our guests will take us through their own journey, what motivated and inspired them to try something new, and how they ultimately set the standard in their field. On top of that, they will provide actionable insights and ideas on how you can set the standard in your own way. So grab a cup of coffee and let's get to it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Social Standard Podcast. Today, we are diving into the world of esports, and we have the infamous Chris Hanna here, who is the CEO of the Esports Observer and a fun guy who I met. I think we met at the end of 2018 at an esports conference in Southern California. So it's awesome to reconnect, and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm great. We were just saying it's interesting times, and I think it's really nice to kind of connect with people over the podcast is something that I have realized in the last, I guess, since we've been doing this about 6-7 months, I've really been enjoying it. Just getting to hear different, it's a wonderful way to connect in a time where connecting in person is just not as available as it was. So it's super cool. I am really excited to get back into the conference world once that's available, because it's hard to replace some of the in-person connections that you can make. I think actually when we met, if I recall correctly, we were both talking about who's going to create the Barstool Sports of esports.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think it's been created yet.
No, I know that they've done something with gaming, but I don't think that has been created yet.
Yeah. So we might still be onto something there.
let's talk about it offline.
Right. Exactly. We'll see. Okay. So before we dive into all of all these theories that I have on esports and influencer marketing, can you just give our audience a quick background on your journey with esports, how you got into it, and kind of how you have ended up where you are, which is now part of the Sports Business Journal?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you the really quick rundown, because otherwise I'm going to bore you and everyone who's listening to this. I started in the corporate world as a project and program manager for a large telco here in Europe. Did that for 10 years.
Wow.
But I've always been a gamer, like lifelong gamer, since, you know, I got the Game Boy in 89.
Oh yeah, Game Boys.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So my mom played more Tetris than I did, I guess. But, you know, that's how it was back then.
Always
loved gaming. Never considered gaming a career path until I then decided to quit my job. Wanted to do something else. Took my MBA. You know, mm-hmm. I had a career planned in the consulting space, and then figured out, like, you know what, I'm going to give it 2 years to just see if I can break into gaming. Mm-hmm. And since I'm really competitive, I, you know, quickly figured out I want to be in esports, right? And okay. I followed what was there back then. And I, you know, always loved these things. So I felt like, let's see if I can do it. Worked for me. So I joined esports team Fnatic, sold sponsorships from there, co-founded an agency, which was not my thing, to be fair.
Sure.
And then, you know, through the right connections at the right time, ended up with the Esports Observer, a company that was just founded. I think it was like 3 months old or something, like lacked a bit of vision. Like it wasn't really clear where it's going and what needs to happen. So I took that over, bootstrapped this hard, and together with, you know, our core investors. And yeah, got in touch with American City Business Journals back in the days, who owned Sports Business Journal. And, you know, it was just a complementary business model. Like, we did the same things. We did it for esports. They did it for sports. It was a kind of make or buy decision. They invested in us and then quickly figured out, you know, we should be working together. So they acquired us, or the parent company acquired us in the end of 2018.
Okay.
And we just recently fully integrated the Esports Observer into Sports Business Journal, which I believe makes a lot of sense, because now mm-hmm. we can bridge, you know, sports and esports, and can make sure that we're hitting both of our audiences, right, with the right content.
Definitely. Wow. I mean, that's a pretty interesting path, right? And I think you're right too. It's every time you read anything about like esports in the news that's more generally targeted, not gaming focused necessarily, they do try to kind of connect the traditional sports with esports. And I think that's something I've even seen as people are going out and, you know, they have investor decks to raise money, to build training facilities, to buy teams, to do all of this. There's always a cross sort of path, cross-pollination between traditional esports, which makes a lot of sense, right? You've got to tie it back to what people understand.
It's, It's also funny, and I don't have the numbers with me right now, so I need to be careful with what I say. But we had a newsletter also as well, and one of my reporters put this together. If you look at who kind of owns North American esports, it's the traditional sports industry, right? And if you, and like, and when I say own, I mean you look at the large franchises with the, you know, huge franchise buy-in fees. Like, there's a lot of sports teams, right? NFL, NBA, like all these ownership groups are getting into esports. So there's a lot of connections between them.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously you got to be bold and put out statements. So what I always say is, like, you know, North American esports is owned by the traditional sports industry.
Yeah.
And we can argue about that, but there is a lot of money coming from that. So that's why I also think, you know, there is, it's not just similar or, you know, not just about athletes. I believe, for example, that esports is more entertainment than it is sport. But there is a connection, and, you know, that's why I'm really happy that we can make that connection now and serve both audiences at the same time.
And I know, I mean, my hometown, I grew up in Indiana, and the Colts are, you know, kind of my home team. And I saw the other day that they were making investments in esports and doing tournaments and things. And I thought, wow, okay, if this is happening in Indiana, it's a very interesting signal, right? Which is kind of what I want to talk to you about, is that the way, like, my path with esports has been a little, you know, a little different than yours, right? We're not directly in it, but we approach it from the influencer space. And, you know, when we first met in 2018, it felt like esports was really kind of on the come up, right? Everyone was talking about it. It was in the press everywhere. Brands were starting to dip their toes in the water and figure out how to partner in really interesting ways. And that kind of continued for a while. But it seems like things have slowed down a little bit in terms of, like, news coverage. So I have a few theories on that. But the thing that I want to point out, though, is even though I feel like from that standpoint in the ad world, it's slowed down, what has been so interesting to me is that in my own personal life, it has been more prevalent. And I'm not a gamer, so I started gaming. But what I mean instead is that, you know, our air conditioning unit in our house broke the other day. And so I had an HVAC guy come over, check it out. And we're talking, and he tells me that his son is a college baseball player. And then when COVID happens, everything shuts down. He was bored. He picked up gaming. He was really good. And he won a few tournaments. And then he got signed by a team in Texas and got a huge contract off of this. And he's, like, off to the races with it. And he was sort of like, I don't know how to guide him, but this is really cool. And I actually, you know, the HVAC guy's a little bit older, obviously. And he was like, I didn't know that this was even a thing, right? But this is in the middle of Tennessee that this is happening, right? And then the other day, I'm having a conversation with my neighbor, and she's like, oh yeah, my daughter is off meeting someone, like an online friend that she met in Discord. They're going to a concert together in South Carolina. And, you know, I grew up in the age where, like, people were starting to get into dating apps and connecting online. So it didn't feel totally like full stop, what do you mean? But it was just like, how is this happening in my neighborhood, right? Which is like the small little, like, lakeside neighborhood that is, you know, not what you would think would be like the epicenter of trends and understanding and being at the forefront of esports, but it's happening. So at the same time that I'm not really seeing as much in, like, the advertising world and announcements and things, obviously, you know, if you go to the Esports Observer, you're going to see it there, but I'm talking about an Ad Week, Ad Age, where all this stuff was for a long time. So what do you make of that exactly? Like, what's going on in esports right now?
Yeah, so that's a lot to unpack in there.
I'll try to go through
all the points I have. But I mean, look, the beauty of this is it's all digital, right? And, like, most gamers, and that's a generalization, so it's not per se true. But, you know, a lot of the gamers are familiar with digital communication channels, you know, and we communicate there. So Discord is something, even before that, like Ventrilo, TeamSpeak, all the stuff you had, where you were just connecting and talking already. Mm-hmm. I just came back, like, last weekend, I was on a guild meet for my World of Warcraft guild.
Nice.
Right? So we do the same thing. And it's funny if you see, you know, there's, like, what, 15 people made it, and you had, like, all these, you know, you had parents who have kids already, right? Yeah. You have, like, people that were younger than me, like, it's, but we all get along because we're playing together. And I think that connect has always been there. Why isn't it in mainstream mass media, or why hasn't it been? When COVID hit, it was, right? Because all of a sudden you had, like, all the racing simulations, like NASCAR went big on, are we going to just simulate the thing? And what we've been discussing a lot is, it's nice that we have it, but it is just a kind of substitute for the real thing. And the moment the real thing is back, nobody cares about the gaming variant of it anymore. And that's kind of what happened, I would say, because, you know, when we had a pause on live events for, I don't know, League of Legends, Counter-Strike, and that, like, everyone looked at, okay, how can we use, you know, like sports simulations to kind of substitute the real thing? Mm. But it's not that we're talking about the biggest esports competitions or competitive gaming competitions.
Right.
But that's where people picked it up so much. And then obviously that kind of dropped off by now, I guess. So you're not reading about this as much anymore.
Right.
But if you look at mainstream media, it's often around these stadium events, you know, the big global events, and they're gone.
Right.
And I think that is why you don't hear so much. Like, you'll hear a lot about the international again. You'll hear a lot about that stuff happening with, you know, the millions in prize money. And that's what typically drives mainstream media attention. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be back. I guess it kind of paused during the later stage of COVID because we were back to online gaming. And it was actually kind of going back to the roots, like where it came from, doing everything like, you know, remotely and not being in these big stadiums. Mm-hmm. But it's still been there. It's still, you know, I mean, gaming companies made millions, right,
sure,
through COVID, where they just, like, everyone was home gaming.
Yep.
So it was kind of perfect for them. And I don't want to say that they're happy about it, you know, that we had COVID, but it's...
Of course not.
It was a good timing, right? And people were playing more games. And then you have all these digital hangout spaces, as you said, right? You have Discord, where it's not just a gaming thing anymore,
right,
by far,
it's not,
right?
Absolutely not.
And you have things like Fortnite, where people go and meet and hang out and by now watch movies and, you know, watch concerts and, like, do all that stuff in a digital environment, which is just the world we live in, which I think is amazing. I wish I had that when I was younger, but I think it's just cool to see all that stuff. So I don't think that attention has been gone. I don't think it slowed down.
Okay.
It just shifted back to an online world and it's now coming back.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, the other theory that I was sort of kicking around is, you know, a lot of things happened in terms of brands, because it's not just the press coverage, it's also the brand deals that I'm not seeing quite as much come out in, like, more mainstream publications, whereas we were seeing that a lot for a while. And could just be that the hype is dying down. But one of the theories that I was kicking around internally with our team is that, you know, if you look at, like, the last 2 years, a lot has happened for brands, right? You have, of course, just the settling down of, like, what's happening with COVID. But then on top of that, then you've got Clubhouse coming out, right? That has a big spike. Then you have, what is Triller? What's going on? And then, of course, you've got TikTok, right? And TikTok just taking over. And in my view, it's like, how many new things can brands actually master in a brand new environment for them? And where do they decide where to put their stake in the ground? And I think a lot of them ended up deciding to go with TikTok, right? Whereas I thought, okay, same thing you were saying is, I thought, all right, this is the time for esports to shine, right? Everyone's going to be gaming all the time. This is going to be, like, you know, rising tides raise all ships. That means people are going to get more interested in esports, and esports should, in theory, have this huge boom. But I hadn't seen it. And I thought, well, maybe it's because TikTok. Maybe TikTok's stolen some thunder from esports. I mean, how have you seen TikTok impact the gaming and the esports industry?
So I want to go back before I answer that. And I think that it's also a matter of, how interesting is it to report on the 50th brand integration, right, in esports?
Sure.
And it still will be, 50 is fine, but, you know, I mean, we do it, like, we live from,
I don't,
like,
disagree,
that's,
but
that's
people also talk about, like, who's winning what accounts and, like, you know, what's the ad that's happening now? And it's like, they report on the same stuff all the time, right?
Yeah, because I just feel like, if, you know, Mercedes-Benz comes in, like, first big car manufacturer, and it's not that they were the first, but, you know, they come in really big.
Sure.
Everyone's like, oh my God, look at this. Second one comes in, oh my God, look at this.
Yeah.
Third one comes in, oh my God. Then you have, like, Louis Vuitton, Riot Games, everyone's freaking out. But the more brands from a specific segment, when it, like, go in, it's like, yeah, it's another one, right? And then and then it kind of, the hype kind of
just loses,
slows down
deal
a bit.
Sure.
It's still great. It's still awesome. The deals are still there. It's just a matter of, you know, you don't make such a big fuss as you probably did, like, for the first one or five. I think if you look at TikTok, it's crazy. Like, and I have to admit, it's a world I don't understand anymore. Like, I think TikTok for me is the social platform where I'm just like, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but I'm not using it at all.
Sure.
It's like, I understand it. I watch some TikToks. Like, I totally get why it's, you know, engaging and funny. But, you know, you were waiting for this moment of, when am I going to be too old for this?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with TikTok, I really felt like, oh shit, I think I hit
lost
that point.
It's done for me.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think that's it. You know, I'm out. But
I think that's how I felt about it initially too, just to be totally clear. But I'm in, and I am an avid, like, lover of TikTok now. So you may want to give it a shot. I'm just going
to
say.
I need to because, like, I can't get around it, obviously, right? Because everyone's involved. And I think specifically with gaming too, I mean, it's how people consume content. And, you know, we talk about attention spans and, you know, what people do. And I think it didn't necessarily take away from the audience, right? Or took away all of the attention. I think there's a great symbiosis, and you see a lot of gaming, you know, content happening on TikTok, as you saw it on Snap before and other platforms. So I'm not going to do it justice now, but I think it's another distribution channel for the same kind of content, just in a different way.
So I
probably need to give it another shot, and I, you know, probably need to, I mean, I love some of the TikToks. It's just, I'm not going to the app and, you know, looking for stuff. That will probably change at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there's a lot of good gaming content on there. No doubt, you know, and I think it's interesting that you talk about esports as being like entertainment. And that's really how TikTok is, you know, it's self-described, of course, but they're saying, you know, they've claimed to be the number one entertainment app in the App Store. But it's really, TikTok is more about entertainment. And we see the shift of social media from social connect to straight entertainment, right? I think that's the current race to the finish line with a lot of, like, you almost have to call them like digital communities, digital entertainment properties now, right? It's hard to look at Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and say they're social, because they don't seem that social anymore. So, you know, I think that's actually one of the things that is kind of interesting about gaming, right? Is that it is actually pretty social, because you're on and you're playing, you're not in person necessarily, but you are connecting with someone. You know, on Discord, you've got the ability to sit there and, you know, talk into your microphone and have a conversation. People live chat all the time on Twitch, right? It's a little bit more engaging, a little bit more social than like a TikTok, for example.
I mean, a couple of examples, you know, Twitch, I wanted to bring that up too, is like, depending on how big the channel is, right? If you have questions, like, your streamer will answer your question, right? You can you can actually engage. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about sports today, I had this realization at a conference where I listened to a talk, and, you know, somebody was talking about shift in like consumption patterns, right? How do people consume content? And we talked about like football, and as in soccer, like European football, and so it's not the people want to watch, and again, in a generalization, right? But it's not that people want to watch a 90-minute match necessarily, but, you know, you want to see the summary of the, so you want to see what the player had for breakfast, how he trained, then you want to see the highlights, and then you want to see what car he drives to which restaurant to have dinner with whom, right? So and that's something where that's true, and you want to get that in 1 minute, right? You don't want to watch like 10-minute videos anymore. It's like bite-sized, you know, give it to me in a compressed format. And that's where, I mean, obviously TikTok is, you know, great. So I can see why it works.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you bring up even the kind of the sports side of things where, and it really it's anyone, right? I think it's just transition to sports in a lot of different ways. But, you know, the NCAA in the States have come out, and now they're having, you know, college athletes are starting to be able to sign deals and do things that they historically have not been able to do. And you see a lot of that kind of happening, I would say, across media. But something that I have heard the whisperings of in the esports arena is that, well, two things. So one, I guess, how does it work when you sign as a member of a team, right? You don't have control over your social channels. Right. The way that I understand it is that the teams usually control that, and they control the brand deals. They're almost like a management agency in that. Right. Is that the case? Like, how is that working? And how is, you know, how does the ruling with the NCAA and how they're going on this journey, walking this path, how's that going to impact esports athletes?
So, when I was at the team, and that's like years ago, yes, I mean, the team kind of was the agency for the players, but we already had a player that had his own representation. Mm. And right now you see all these player management agencies coming up, right? And even for players that are in teams, right? So I think it's a mix of both. And if the team gets a bigger deal because, you know, they're aggregating, their kind of reach, or they're aggregating their engagement, that can work, and then you benefit from that. But there is a lot of players that have their own management and representation and can do their own deals. It's always tricky because, you know, what can you do that then works with the league? So when you look at FTX and the deal they did with TSM, and then all of a sudden Riot said, oh no, you know, we have like crypto excluded, you can't just rename for our games.
Right.
And then, you know, Riot Games did the deal with like FTX, and you feel like, interesting. So, it's all these kind of things. So I think it will need to level out somehow. So we need to figure out what really works, what doesn't work. But it's right now it's already like a mix of both for sure.
And
it's not just teams, because I feel when we talk about, and you know, this goes more into your direction, like when we talk about athletes, I always find, you know, I think that the borders are vanishing. What's mm-hmm. what's a professional player versus an entertainer versus, mm-hmm. you know, just a streamer, if you want to say, right. or an influencer? Like, mm-hmm. where do you draw the line?
Yeah, very blurry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is, right? And I mean, there's a lot of people that are really successful even without teams.
Sure.
So even if you're, and you don't have to be a pro player, you don't even have to be a pro player to be in a team, because you can yeah. just be on the kind of stream team or, you know, the entertainment portion of it.
Yeah. Gen G has that model, right? Where they have their athletes and then they have content creators as part of like a network.
It's a lot of them. And you look mm-hmm. at, you look at Complexity, they just signed Tim the Tatman, you know, for them. Yeah. So that's big. And but they've been like deals like that before. So it's always, right now it's always a mixture. And I don't want to go too far, but if you look at what esports teams actually do, and it kind of fits our conversation, because mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer of esports teams are media companies, mm-hmm. and some Great. Of them just don't know it yet, yeah. right? And then you have some that really get it. So you look at, and there are all these different approaches to esports that are not mm-hmm. just esports related. So you look at a FaZe Clan, more like a network. Yeah. You look at, you know, Fnatic, obviously doing a lot yeah. of things, but also have their own peripheral company. Right. Then you look at G2 Esports, you know, where Carlos goes out and says, oh, no, we want to be, you know, we're building IP, like we want to be the Disney of esports, so to say. Right. And sure. I'm paraphrasing yeah. this, but you have all these different approaches, 100 Thieves with their merchandise yeah. lines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's bigger on fashion. So yeah. it's almost like and a friend said this once, it's almost like using esports as a launch pad to then build other services to monetize an esports audience.
Yeah.
And that's what you see a lot. And key is branding. Like, how do you position your brand, and is it clear what your brand is? And a lot of teams are not clear on this. Like, if you go sure. through top, I don't know, LEC, LCS teams, and you just mm-hmm. look at the name and you tell me what they are. And there's a lot of them where you're like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what they stand for. And I think that's a big problem, right?
Sure. Yeah. But, you know, like people, FaZe Clan, 100 Thieves, I mean, they have killer brands, right? You yes. know exactly who they are, and you know exactly the type of gamer or, you know, audience member is going to go for that type yeah. of content, right?
And you don't even have to be a gamer to like them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Se, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't even have to follow their match results or their kind of successes, because you're still probably buying their stuff or consuming mm-hmm. their content just because of what it is. And I think yeah. that are really good examples of, you know, how I look at esports and what yeah. esports is, and kind of go, you know, a little bit beyond it's just people playing video games competitively, even though they do it for millions, but it's way more than this. And that's where I always draw this, you know, cultural aspect in, where I say, you know, it's gaming culture. It's like,
yeah,
it's social code. It's identification. Right. When mm-hmm. I was in school, I wasn't cool because I was a gamer. And now, you know, when I look at what I'm doing, like I'm kind of at the forefront of
what's happening. You were just ahead of your time.
Everything. See, I was kind of, I hope, like, let's just book it like this.
Yeah,
check.
Exactly.
No, but that's how it was, right? And today mm-hmm. it's different, because everyone's like, I know parents who started playing Fortnite because they want to do something with their kids.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of, and it's more socially accepted to mm-hmm. play.
It is. Yeah.
So I think that's where we see this generational shift, mm-hmm. and you know, let's see where this leads to.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, right? Because I think even if you go back a few years, or even if you go back 10, 12, 15 years, you know, you have Machinima in the US, which was yes. the gaming MCN, right? And you remember at that point in time, it was like, no one's touching gamers. I mean, they are, right? The very endemic sort of style brands that have nothing really to lose are doing it. But we've even watched this sort of shift within the brand partners that we have, where people were very, very scared of gaming. No one wanted to touch it. People knew that it was a really lucrative audience and the place they needed to be, but they were scared out of their minds to like get involved. And now fast forward, it's like, we're doing gaming deals. We do a handful of gaming deals, at least a quarter now, you know, going from zero a few years ago. I don't see the same thing with esports, just because I think that esports is sort of, it's the new gaming, right? It's brands are a little nervous about esports. They don't understand it completely, because you're looking at a lot of people who are probably 40 plus that are making the decisions on some of this stuff, and they just don't get it, right? And that's not a knock on them. I think it's a more challenging concept to get. I still think, even to your point, a lot of people who are in it don't fully get what it will likely become.
It's me and TikTok. It's me and TikTok.
Yes.
You know, it's what it is.
It is. That is exactly right. But you know, the thing that it's interesting you point that up, because, you know, or you bring that up, because what I've seen is the way that brands are getting around some of that is, you know, like Nerf, for example, hired a chief TikTok officer. So if Nerf wants to get into esports, does Nerf need to hire a chief esports officer?
So I think that's interesting. I do believe that it's a problem that's going to solve itself purely through time. Mm-hmm. Right. If you don't want to wait until the next generation comes up, but there's people like, right. So I'm almost 40, and I'm hardcore into gaming.
Yeah.
And everyone, like, I mean, the younger generation, they grew up in a world where gaming was never not normal. Mm-hmm. Right. It's always been around. It's always been a part, and you can like it or not, but it's what you said, right? It's like sports athletes, very successful, and they game. Like, you know, Bundesliga teams, when they go to their away matches, they're sitting in their buses, they're playing like FIFA, they're playing video games.
Yeah.
So kind of everyone does it. It has this negative connotation of, oh, you're a gamer, so nobody wants to be a gamer, but kind of everyone has some kind of association with gaming or plays something.
Sure.
So I think that will help and solve that problem. Like right now, it's really about get involved with the community. I feel if you would hire like a chief esports officer, it wouldn't necessarily solve the problem.
Brands
are still afraid, right? If you look at I don't want to make it about esports. Let's go back to gaming because you know esports is just the tip of the gaming iceberg. But if you go back to that, like the community is kind of very special. You know, it's a very vocal, a very vocal community. So,
very
and if you
passionate.
Go in just, that's great. They're passionate. And if you go in and you know, they're happy. Like a lot of fans are happy that big brands come in to support what they love. Yeah. So when you see big brands coming in doing cool stuff, they understand they're being advertised to, but they're okay with it because, you know, there's a big company putting money into what they love.
Exactly. But that's Gen Z across the board though, right?
Yeah, but if you come in and it's just like a money grab, you know, they're gonna tell you to fuck off, and they're gonna be very, they're gonna be very loud about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I feel. If you look at, you know, some brands coming in, and there's some examples in Germany where they used their corporate lingo, went into esports, and started talking to the audience like they would talk to their peers, and everyone's like, fuck off. Like,
right, just get out of here.
Get out of here. Yeah. But then you have other brands where, you know,
the DHL example, I know that's an old one, but the DHL example where people are literally like chanting in a DHL, like why DHL, you know, that's like in the US, that's like UPS. It's like, why would you ever expect a gaming community to be like chanting the name of like a delivery courier service?
Trust me as a German, I will never get it. But I mean, I know what they did and I understand why it happened.
Yeah.
But like when I see the videos, and it's one of the examples I still show to people, where because like, look, it's one of the least sexy industries and it's probably one of the least sexiest brands that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Logistics,
and, like,
super
the,
fun.
Yes. And yeah, wow. And the audience went crazy because it did some cool stuff for them, right? So they really support it. You had one example is like where Mercedes-Benz started with their lingo and then people felt like, oh my God, and started trolling them on Reddit and everywhere, making fun of them, you know, about their sedan. And then they picked it up and they kind of went with the joke. So they went along and then they shifted the momentum just because everyone's like, oh, cool. You know, they're actually understanding like the joke now, they're taking us seriously and they're actually going along with it.
Right.
And then the momentum shifted into it's amazing. Right,
right.
It's such a different audience for a lot of like large brands.
Yeah.
And if you would like you're a large corporation, you hire me, I'll tell you like let's do this. You'll probably still be you know scared and say, oh, we can't do this. We need to start like smaller.
Yeah.
So it's if you would hire like an I don't know director of esports or whatever, like you really need to be open. And I hate the word because it's overused, but it's got to be authentic. And you have to engage. You have to engage with the audience because if you don't do that, like people will notice anyway, and they're gonna tell you to leave.
Oh, absolutely. And even you know, to our point earlier, it's like I had a conversation someone on my team the other day, and it's authenticity. I know you're so right that word is overused, but in a world where we live most of our lives, it feels like digitally, people see right through it. I mean, they could do it before when it was just Instagram influencers. And like they were, you know, showing a product. It's like, okay, not sure because I don't see your full life. But now that you do Instagram stories and you live stream on YouTube and you do TikTok videos, I know when you are being truthful and when you are not being truthful. And it's so easy to see everything. So
I mean, you know this better than I do, but that is why so many brand deals I feel just don't work. Because if you then try to give me a product that I just don't like, and you make me like promote your product, and it's cool, I can tell my, like, depending on who I am, I can say, oh, you know what, Jess is giving me this amount of money, so I introduce this to you, like, it's amazing, and, you know, make it funny, and then people will be happy with it. But if you just really pretend, and people can tell that you're pretending, I don't know. Like, I think it's never going to work.
I think that's why we've seen the resurgence of affiliate models, so people could share really what they love. And I think it's also why ambassador programs are so big. And ambassador programs in esports make a lot of sense too, right? And even I almost think about, you know, people always say, oh, well, you know, a name on a jersey, like that's kind of like a cop out. But I really don't, in esports, I really don't think it is. I think it's a stake in the ground on... Yeah. We're here, we want to be involved, and we want to be viewed as part of the community. I think it's probably one of the easiest ways, most expensive probably too, but one of the easiest ways to really sort of get in there and start the conversation.
And it's literally is expensive, right? So you're right. So it's probably not the cheapest way to get in. And that's what a lot of brands also don't get, right? I mean, you can start small. Why go and buy like the biggest thing you can get? I mean, if you want to make a statement, yeah, fine, go and spend the money. It's cool and you can do that. And it's awareness and it works. But it's all about activation and how you activate. And that's going back to DHL, like the way they activated the brand with that audience made people just chant their name in a stadium. And you're like, okay, that's weird. And you see this like with a couple of, you know, products where it's just about how do you actually activate your product with the audience and make it cool or interesting, or, you know, get some emotional response, right? Whatsoever. Right. And I mean, you can best spot anyways, like half of the people hate you, the other half loves you, right? That's where you want to be. That's a sweet spot.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's finding people that really like what you do or really like use your product, enjoy your product. Like, it's always going to beat everything else.
Yeah.
I feel. Yeah, but you're the expert. You tell me if I'm wrong.
And talking to a lot of brands, it's like, how do you scale with esports? Right. And I think probably a big solve is adding the gaming component to it. But how is it that you can scale if you're doing activations? It's like, really, it's at tournaments and it's at events. Like, how do you scale it in its native form digitally?
That's a good question.
I think that's what keeps a lot of brands who want to be involved away from it.
Yeah. And I mean, you can always add more, and you can always, you know, throw money at stuff and then see if it works. I think it's a matter of what you're trying to do and why do you want to scale and to what, right? So, and then it's really...
Well, some of it's just like, okay, well, you're Coca-Cola, and doing a program that only reaches 10,000 people doesn't actually make a ton of sense for you.
Yeah, but I mean, go to a league, you know, work with a league.
Yeah, yeah.
Work with larger properties, like that always works. Or I'm not sure if it would work if you would put your logo on every jersey, right? Because then people also probably not even going to notice it anymore at some point. But I mean, there's always... And that is the kind of beauty and the curse of the esports industry, because it's not as big as people think. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the Overwatch League, you know, you look at the Call of Duty League, you look at the LCS, the LEC, like Worlds, you look at these kind of properties, like you can sponsor these, but when we're talking life event perspective, it's probably not going to get any bigger right now. I mean, there's a lot of different properties that you can sponsor, but it's really a matter of like, do you want to sponsor them all? Like, do you want to go and develop something? Like, how can you help develop not just the audience, but the industry? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you grow with them, and that's probably how you scale. So I think if you come in, and I know brands that say like, it's too small. And I know companies that said, oh, we're looking for acquisitions, but there's no large enough company for us to buy.
Right.
Like, leave the publishers aside. And, you know, that still happens. And I think we're in the early days. So, you know, to your point of, is the hype gone? So I think it's not going to go away. It's going to stick around. It's not going to go away. When, you know, now when live events are going to come back, you'll see more in mainstream media. And I think we just have to grow. And if brands support the growth, you know, like in a serious way, that is how they will scale. I don't think it's a matter of, let's throw more money at stuff and let's make sure that we do more promotion, right? Because at one point, you're just going to know your audience.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's not certainly not where anybody wants to be, right? In the annoyance category. Okay. Let's see. So, I mean, something else that I had heard a little bit about recently too, and maybe you can shed light on this. Maybe this is something that's sort of out of your purview, but if people are deciding between going pro with esports versus becoming a streamer or a YouTuber, Isn't there just more money in being a streamer or a YouTube gamer?
Yeah, I mean, if you're at the top of the top, I say yes. Mm-hmm. But then you see that complexity now, you know, kind of got involved with Tim the Tatman and, you know, mm-hmm. got him under contract. So I think there's benefits in...
Well, just explain that partnership real quick, because I don't know that everyone that listens will have heard all of it.
Well, I mean, so right now he became part of Complexity, right?
Right.
So he's under the Complexity brand right now. And if you ask me, like, just looking from the outside, mm-hmm. like, did he have to do that? Like, I don't think so. Because, like, right. If you're one of the top streamers, but then again, there's how many of them?
Right.
Right. So can you make it? Can you become a ninja? Like, can you really be a ninja who, you know, go through the media circus and everyone knows you and, you know, you get your own Adidas shoes and all that stuff? Like, how many people are there right now who can actually do that?
Well, I don't even think you need to do that. I think you simply sign up. If you're streaming on YouTube and you get the ad money, I mean, you're talking about, I think the question is like, are you trying to make millions of dollars, or are you cool to be at home and play video games and make 200 grand a year?
Yeah. I mean, do you have the potential to make your millions? And then I guess, I mean, you see a lot of people living really well, not being in a team mm-hmm. and, you know, there's only so many people teams can sign.
Right.
And if you have a good, if there's a good overlap, like I don't think that it's, you know, I mean, I don't think it excludes each other, so you can still do that. And that's why also so many like teams have stream teams, et cetera, and there's benefits to this. You look at larger deals, you know, but it really depends on how big you are as an individual person and what your mm-hmm. audience is. I'm pretty sure that there is, I know for a fact that there is like individual streamers, you know, that are probably worth more in terms of like dollars, if you want, you know, than some other organizations overall.
Sure.
So for sure, that's the case. It's almost like, are you a gamer? Are you like a player? Are you, mm-hmm. you know, do you just want to entertain? That goes back to kind of what are you and where do you see yourself in that kind of vanishing borders environment? But I'm pretty sure that if you're like, if you have like what it takes, you know, in that sense, I'm pretty sure you can just be you as a, you know, you as Jess doing what you do.
Sure.
And you don't have to join any team because it's more lucrative for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just, you know, you think a little bit about that. It's like, you just kind of wonder when does it flip a little bit, you know, or maybe it doesn't, you know, and I even think the same thing's happening with NCAA athletes right now, right? We see a lot of athletes who I think would potentially want to walk away from being on a sports team at the college level to be an influencer full-time mm-hmm. just because that's, I mean, how do you walk away from brands paying you, you know, 50 grand to be an ambassador and you got five or six of those, right? Just because your team or your school says you can't do it. It's like, that's going to be tough. Right. And I kind of just wonder to your point too, about entertainment, where it's like, at what point are teams putting players on the bench for true talent versus entertainment?
So that's a question. If you open that box, like, we can go on for hours.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you like a story about this, but just to go back quickly, I think it's, mm-hmm. so if you look at the amount of people we're talking about, mm-hmm. even with teams, you look at the amount of professional teams, like there's limited space, right? And not everyone can be in the Overwatch League, in the Call of Duty League. But if my goal is I want to be a pro player and I want to win worlds, you know, in League of Legends, then obviously I want to play for a team and I want to kind of get there because I can't do that alone.
Okay.
If it's for me just about, I want to be an entertainer and I want to make money, it's probably easier for me, even if I wasn't a team, to at that, you know, hit that point where I'm just, okay, now I built my brand. We're back to
branding. And that's just because some of these games are team games, right? They're not single person shooter games, right?
But, I mean, you can still stream League of Legends alone, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. not that you win tournaments then per se in that sense, but mm-hmm. you can just play and people will still watch and, you know, follow you. I feel it's just really a matter of there's going to be a point when you got to decide what you want to be. And if you have if you can live from that, I mean, there is more streamers and more YouTubers and more influencers, and there's probably professional players.
Sure.
And I go back to a discussion I always have with a friend. And I make this just for fun right now because, you know, the truth is in the middle, I guess.
Okay.
She might disagree. But I said, if I would have a franchise slot and I would, you know, and I can't be demoted and, you know, I'm just there anyway and I paid the money. Sure. I'd cast like the Backstreet Boys, you know, I would go for personalities and I make this as a fun statement, but I would go for personalities because there's always this question of what is more important, winning games right. or being entertaining. And it's both. I agree. Yeah. Right? And she's on the performance angle. I'm on the entertainment angle.
Okay.
Truth in the middle. She's right. If you don't win anything, like, it's not going to help. But if you lose everything, you can still be the team that loses yeah. everything, and people just exactly. still love you for losing exactly. and for yes. playing around with it.
Yeah, you're like the Bears, right?
I think you need both. So I think yeah. I definitely think you need both. Like, it doesn't help you if you have the best pro players, but when you get the brand deals in, you know, they can't like promote something, or they can't, you know, present themselves on camera. That's why they get media training. You know, that's why they're trained for these kind of things. So I think it's a kind of mix of both. And I believe that if you're a professional organization, if you really need that player, but he can't do all that stuff, but you will win, mm-hmm. you'll still put him in the game. But I guess the ideal scenario is like, you have the best player and he can still, or she can still go, you know, on stage and present herself and, you know, do brand deals and that stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's probably right. It's just so interesting because I feel like right now we are erring more on the side of entertainment than talent in a lot of ways. But you know, that there again, it's sort of, you go one way, you course correct, you kind of go back and forth until you find the middle.
Why are you watching? Do you watch to play, to be better and see what the pros do, or do you want to be entertained? And you know, depending on which kind of camp you are,
yeah,
you put your emphasis
even
on
like
a different part.
League of Legends, you know, world champions show that you want it to be both, right? I mean, they're developing these digital K-pop brands and like all sorts of crazy stuff that are, I mean, that's some serious entertainment, right?
Yes.
And I think it's smart because how much, I mean, even as much as you love gaming or a particular game and you want to watch these people compete, it's like, there's probably only so much you can do without needing a break. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's probably true of any sport, right? It's like, you know, you love football. Great. But do you want to watch 18 hours straight of football with no break? No, probably not.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's likely, you're right. It's likely somewhere in the middle, but I just think it's so interesting to watch traditional sports learn so much from, you know, digital creators, be that esports athletes, gamers, fashionistas, you know, whoever it is, they're doing a lot more now. And I mean, PGA.
I recently saw, you know, the Panthers game where they had the Panther jumping around the stadium.
Oh, nice.
And that was pretty cool. And then yeah. you look at, yeah, you know, League of Legends, like we had that years ago. And I'm saying we, it's not that I had anything to do with this, right?
Sure.
So don't get me wrong. But yeah. like, they did it and at Worlds, and everyone was freaking out about it because they had a yeah. dragon flying around in the stadium. And it's like, you know,
But it's cool.
It is. 100% it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
yeah.
you know, it's
yeah.
a great application of technology. You mentioned like, you know,
exactly.
KDA, like the band. That is yeah. that's some serious shit because they have a mm-hmm. song. Everyone's
oh, yeah.
listening to the song. They have the like virtual band, obviously.
Yep.
So they're selling skins, right? Mm-hmm. So they're selling the skins for these yep. kind of outfits and they're making
Smart.
Money with it. It's fantastic. Like, but if you look at, you know, same with Louis Vuitton, you look at the Louis Vuitton yeah. integration,
which was
and,
very
you
cool.
know, for me, Riot Games and Epic Games, if you look at everything that happens in Fortnite right now, mm-hmm. you look at all the collaborations mm-hmm. in Fortnite, like what they're getting yeah. into the game, that to me is like the, and I, oh yeah, it's kind of the beginning of, you know, Ready Player One, the kind of metaverse that everyone talks
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I love this, you know, because now I can play like a completely different character with like alongside other IP.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, that combination makes it amazing. And, you know, I'm just waiting for the gaming industry to be more open and combine more assets and combine probably more worlds, you know,
yeah.
to get to that point. But I love it. Like, I talk to people and, you know, they screened movies in Fortnite. So people logged into Fortnite to sit down with an avatar in front of a screen to watch a movie. So they were watching a screen on the screen and you're like, wow. And so you got this popcorn emote, right? So your avatar could eat popcorn. And if I got this right, you had to buy this, right? So I had to buy, like, I had to buy the ability to eat, to have my avatar eat popcorn while I was watching a screen on a screen. And
I see
why it happens, but it's yeah. amazing, right? It's, I mean, mm-hmm. this is, it's just, you know, they understand what
it
they
is.
Have to do. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of brands are getting involved too. I mean, I know Disney has a whole experience now on their website to try to recreate the like in-store experience that you were getting kind of pre-COVID. And I think a lot of that is going to match up with what we're seeing in gaming too. And these, you know, alternate metaverse style things. It's very cool. I mean, I'm not a gamer, but I remember going to Riot in LA a few times, and every time I did the big tour, and every time I go in there, I'm just like, this is incredible. It feels like Disney World, right? But it's more accessible. You don't have to go yep. to like one of the, you know, I guess there are probably 1,000 Disney Worlds all over the world now, but, you know, it's a very cool experience. It's like, if you ever, You growing up in Germany probably don't have these, but we had these restaurants called the Rainforest Cafe in the US that were like, it was like you were eating in a rainforest when you would go. And the food was not good, right? But you were going for the experience. And it's like, that's the same, that, I guess that's really sort of the same thing. So I see why people get sucked in. And, you know, speaking of getting sucked in, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you know, China has come out and said, look for minors. No video games Monday through Thursday, and then Friday, you know, through the weekend, and then holidays. It's like an hour maximum that they're giving their citizens effectively of this. So like, I mean, I know that, you know, it's really more of like South Korea that comes out with a lot of these big time gamers, but there are quite a few coming out of China too. Yeah. I mean, how's that going to affect the gaming and the esports world?
Yeah, probably. Absolutely not qualified to make statements on that because I can see all sides. Would I be that restrictive? Probably not.
Sure.
No, but I can, I mean, I see what they're doing. How, I mean, obviously if you cut access, you know, to get kind of gaming time, mm-hmm. It will definitely have an impact on talent that like, if let's just assume, you know, it's going to remain intact, yeah. Right. And it's going to happen over the next years. It will 100% have an impact on, you know, talent coming out of the countries. And you see this, you know, and probably North America is going to hate me for this, but you see this in different structures right now. When you look at worlds, and you looked at the previous worlds where, you know, it was always like NA where there's EU, mm-hmm. and EU has this completely different league structure where, you know, there's so many different leagues where mm-hmm. you can source talent from. So it, like, it's not per se an academy model, but you have like the top league and then you have multiple other leagues. And, you know, you could always snatch the best players from these leagues to sign for your team. So you had like these talent sourcing opportunities that you probably didn't have, you know, the same way in North America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, I mean, it clearly makes an impact, and you could see it had an impact on the recent performances, you know, at Worlds, for example. So I'm pretty sure, like, if you cut time, it will definitely have an impact on, you know, talent coming out of, because, I mean, and I'm not going to say it's good or bad, so I got to be careful with this now, but you have people that, what, like, 8 hours, 12 hours of game time a day?
Yeah.
Like, but that's what you have, like, if that's what it takes to be the best, you know, people do that.
Sure.
Is that healthy? Depends on the rest of your lifestyle.
Right, of course.
But if you get like too deep sucked into this, I think it's not healthy.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be so restrictive. You know, I think
it would be better to find a different way. Same with anything. It's not like it's just gaming that has this issue. I mean, people who are workaholics have the same issue, right? Hmm. I mean, I used to do investment banking. It's like we were in that office for like 20 of 24 hours a day. That's not healthy.
Yep.
That's definitely not healthy, you know? So, I mean, you got to kind of, there's a little bit of like, you know, ownership and accountability there. But, you know, it's also a very addictive thing. It's very cool to kind of submerge yourself in this. You can kind of lose yourself in a lot of ways that I think younger people are drawn to.
Yeah, but then who's in charge of making sure that your consumption patterns are somewhat in order, right? It's like, I mean, you can put it on parents. You can like
it should be parents,
like,
I would think.
So should game time be barred, or should you get like this? Okay, this is the only thing we allow. Like, should that be like a government decision? I'm not sure. If there's no other way to fix this, probably. I don't know. I think there should be other
China,
measures.
Right?
Yeah, but I think there should be other measures in place, right? Mm-hmm. But I agree. Like, if it's not healthy, like you should take up the problem somehow.
But it's interesting, right? Because you have the whole discussion of, this is not what we came here to talk about, but I'm just going to bring it up anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the whole discussion of screen time with kids too, right? And it's like, what's really the difference between screen time and gaming? In terms of like overall, when you're looking at overall health. And I think that, you know, I mean, TikTok, you know, ByteDance comes out of China, WhatsApp, like all these sort of like platforms that are coming from China anyway. It's like, you wonder, are they ahead of it? And they know something that we don't know? Or is this just something that's, you know, focuses a little bit more on like Chinese culture versus North American or European culture, right?
Well, I'm trying to train myself not to check email all the time on my mobile because it is addictive. Like, I know for a fact, because I sometimes look at my screen time and I feel like I really need to put the thing away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I'm with other people, like, I really kind of feel caught sometimes just looking at my mobile. I'm like, no, I'm here with people. I shouldn't be looking at this right now.
Exactly.
So I need to put this away, right? So it's a habit, like 100%. It's an addiction probably more than a habit. But it's
addictions. Addictions start out as habits.
But right? I think you're right. Like, if you generalize it like this and we zoom out, I don't think there's a big difference between any like negative addictive behavior kind of, right? And I think COVID did not help with that. because people being home all the time and everyone, mm-hmm. More people playing, more people being in front of computers all day. Yep. Like, I think it's kind of accelerating that.
Yeah, definitely. I can see it. Oh, it's interesting. I was so shocked by that announcement or rule, or I guess whatever you want to call it. It just seemed strange to me, given like how I think their culture is so fast with technology and everything. So it's an interesting one. But all right, well, I have one more question for you, and then we will let you go. But we're an influencer marketing company, so I have to ask everyone, who is one influencer who you follow who has made a big impact on your life, or you just can't get enough of their content?
I got to go back in time. Because I'm not following the person anymore per se. But for me it has been Esmo, who's a Hearthstone streamer for also Complexity, but that's like coincidence. And even before he signed with Complexity, like, I followed him, and it's funny because when we started the Esports Observer, like, all the years back, I was sitting in an office, and I mean, mm-hmm. we were it was me in the office.
Yeah.
And and even when we had the agency before that, like, I just started to follow him because I was playing.
Sure.
And I kind of really enjoyed the content. Mm-hmm. music in the background, the way he, to me, authentically behaved, mm-hmm. right? And then the interaction. And I think I followed him for many, many years. And I really, it was go to the office, turn on the stream and just watch. So not sure if it's a big impact on my life, but I spent, and not even active, but also passive hours I spent on that stream a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's interesting because I don't have too many people coming on talking about gamers as influencers that they really kind of gravitate towards. It makes sense, obviously, in your case. But it's interesting to hear that people will just do that. You'll go on, especially so many people have two screens now, even at work. It's you've got one the streaming and one with the work and the email. For me, that's information overload. I can only do one thing at a time.
That's what I mean. It's not that I really sat there and, looked at my second screen like I do right now, and I was watching what he did, but I was stream was running, I was working my stuff away whenever I had 5 minutes or needed a break, when I would do something else, I just, mm-hmm. Watched a little bit or heard I picked something up. So I was looking at it. It was more why people turn on the radio, in the office. It was kind of that thing to me. But I did it for years, for years. And I really... It's so cool because, when I started watching, I saw over time how he kind of developed into what he is today. And I just love it because it's so, and this is the weirdest thing with social media. It's not that you think, the person, but you kind of, you see the person every day. And it's the same with when I have this with friends and Instagram stories, where mm-hmm. I see something on a story and then when I meet them, it almost feels like I was there when they did it.
Yes.
It's like, oh, you did this and this, right? And how do you know? I saw it on your story. And I have the same thing, the other way around. So I feel it's a really weird element by now.
It's weird, right? And it's almost, I think sometimes in your mind, you're like, you can't process if you were there and part of it, or if you just watched it.
And I kind of wasn't there, but I also was there. It's mm-hmm. It's really weird. So, and then you get this feeling of, it's almost like these connection in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's different with friends. I get it. But so never met Esmo in person yet.
Sure.
We'll change that anytime. But I feel like that was probably the person I spent the most, even passive hours, in terms of watching a stream or something. So that's awesome.
That's a good one. I like it. Yeah. Cool. Well, Chris, it was really awesome to talk to you. I feel much better educated in what's going on in esports right now. So I appreciate your insight and all of that. And we may have to pick up this conversation again in 2022.
Let's do that. Thanks for having me.
Yep. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. If you're interested in setting the standard in influencer marketing, please check out our website, www.sostandard.com, or give us a follow on Instagram and LinkedIn. Be sure to head over to the Social Standard YouTube channel to check out the video version of this show. If you're enjoying this podcast, please support us by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a review.